Well, it's very nice to come back here. I remember our last evening seemed to be great fun. I can't remember what I spoke about, but there you go. This evening, what I want to do is spend the first part of the evening conveying what I hope will be some really solid, practical information. So we could say that's maybe me trying to be Saturn in Virgo. Okay? This is a very interesting combination of planetary energies. And really, the energy goes all the way through from even the end of 2007. I mean, for convenience, you can say beginning of 2008. It goes all the way through from there until August, September of 2010. And there are five exact conjunctions. And on the handout, which you'll have, you'll see that the exact dates are all logged there. And I want to just say a little bit about this. I've called it planetary roadmap. What I've done is listed, in fact, all the aspects between Saturn and Uranus, which are the current hot topic. And then come the autumn, of course, Saturn will change sign and go into early Libra, and then it will start picking up squares to Pluto, which brings in a whole additional theme. Tonight we're going to concentrate on the Saturn opposite Uranus, because this is still absolutely dominant for many months still. So on the sheet I've included the whole lot. And what you'll also see is that what I've included is the oppositions of Saturn and Uranus, then eventually the squares of Saturn and Pluto, leading into, and this is way down the line, maybe I can come back and we can have an evening on that, it will be eventually Uranus opposite Pluto. And in between times, what I've also logged here are all the dates on which any of those three players, namely Saturn, Uranus, and Pluto, any date on which they appear to change direction. Now, I know that you're quite an experienced group, so I'm sure you all know that that's called a station, and that simply means that it's when a planet appears to have slowed all the way down and be virtually stationary in preparation to turn direction. And you know the old tagline, I think is the modern word, as above, so below. Well, these stations and turning points in the orbits of the planets are likewise in our life. So it's actually a really wonderful way to learn about astrology, as probably many of you have already discovered. Is if you go through your ephemeris and just note, in fact you could put it in your Filofax, transfer it into the Filofax, that's even better. Note the days on which any planet at all, whether it's Mercury, Venus, anything, is stationary, either turning retrograde or direct, and then give it a run-up of about a week. If it's Pluto, even sometimes 10 days. Really, that depends on whether you're having currently transits of that particular planet, because that sensitizes you to its vibration. But what you'll see is that it's like a wave kind of approaching, and you can see it kind of rolling in, as it were, from way out. So the dates are simply the point when it's stationary. Now, there's a very interesting phenomenon that I've noticed. First of all, just to say that in my feeling, what transits actually log, as it were, is the unfolding of our consciousness. Now, this is not a euphemism, and in saying that, I'm not meaning to deny that sometimes, experiences that accompany transit patterns feel horrible. But it's very important to remember that all of us at the ego level are completely dominated by what Freud would have called the pain-pleasure principle. In other words, we like what feels good and we don't like what feels bad. We go further than that and judge what feels good to be good in itself, and the reverse. If something doesn't feel good, we say it's bad. Not, I feel afraid, frightened, angry, whatever the case you might happen to be feeling. We do that. It's bad. Now, I would caution you, do not do that with your transits, because therein lies madness. I'm being serious. So it's not good or bad. The experience can be pleasant or painful. That doesn't make it good or bad in itself, because the ways of the soul sometimes have to pull us away from what our ego has fixated on. And this is an absolutely core theme, in case you hadn't spotted it already, an absolutely core theme with the combination of Saturn and Uranus. We are invited to wake up. To me, Uranus is the planet of awakening. But you see, from the Saturn point of view, any of the transits of any of the outer planets feel like being under siege, under attack, undermined, whatever the case may be, depending on which planet it is, because it's Saturn's job in the planetary pantheon to keep things as they have been, to keep the boat steady, to preserve, conserve, and endure and build. In other words, one thing it ain't is a planet of change. Although, paradoxically, there's a point in the process, and I'll show you this, we'll look at a graph of how these are moving. There's a point in the process where the energy of our Saturn, who is also the Lord of Manifestation, so the energy of our Saturn is absolutely key to be able to build towards the new, or to ground and anchor the new. But when it's in the bit of the breaking down of the old, it can feel very painful. And that's just how it is. That doesn't make it bad. Okay. So, on the stations, if you are really observing your own process, as I say, give it a run-up of about a week, maybe even 10 days, and just observe. Notice your own frame of mind, watch your dreams, watch the synchronicities, and try, if possible, to get some extra, what I call sacred time. That will usually mean solitude, but that's not a given. It will mean time where you have the space to focus on what's going on for you, maybe write in your journal, if you have a friend or a therapist with whom you feel really open and can process things, that's ideal. So in other words, I think of the stations, all of them, as sacred times. Now, what I've noticed is that there's like what I call the snowplow principle, meaning that as the energy of, let's say, Uranus, or it could be Saturn, could be anybody, this is a general principle now, as the energy is kind of approaching us, you know, it's always Saturn's knee-jerk reaction to go, no. And Saturn, in that description, represents our ego defenses. We always will go, no, at first, because any change is a threat to the Saturnian principle. And then we go into a period of turbulence, either internal or external, where it's as if we're invited to confront and process the obstacles that are in the way of us being able to embrace the new energy. Now, the reason I call that the snowplow principle is that one time when I was trying to explain this, I just had this picture of a snowplow going down a road, you know, and the road's all clogged up with snow, okay? So along comes the snowplow, making this unbelievable kind of display of like wet, filthy snow flying all over the place and creating mountains on the side of the road. It's a mess. It's a total mess. But it does clear the road eventually. So by the time of the day of the station, all being well, and by that I mean if we have had the grace to be able to give due consciousness to the process en route, as it were, think snowplow, by the day of the station, what you actually get, if you can configure your schedule, your timetable and your life to be there to receive it, what you get is a kind of download, to use a contemporary word, a download of the really pure energy which nourishes body and soul. No two ways about it. So typically, the really action-packed bit when a station is approaching actually occurs in the week beforehand. And if you watch the news, you will see that too. So that's the reason I've included all those stations, because I think of them as the stepping stones. And of course, they are quite literally experienced as turning points. And that can be very, very useful, as I think you'll see when we start to talk more about the actual Saturn and Uranus combo. Because one of the qualities of at least the early stages of this combination of Saturn and Uranus is a tremendous pressure for change and a tremendous resistance at the same time. So the tension is very high. And sometimes, you know, one can get into trying too hard, being too controlling. Here in, you know, it's Saturn in Virgo and Uranus in Pisces, so it's really polarized. One can get into being far too Saturn in Virgo and, you know, almost unable to let yourself off the hook. And if you know when the planetary stations are, you can say, well, help is on the way during those times, because the energy is incredibly strong. And all you have to do is to just make space in your life, in your heart and your mind to receive it. In a way, it's that simple. Particularly, for instance, and these are all examples taken from real life, you know, my life, my practice, whatever. When there's, over the last 18 months or so, every time we're coming up to a station of either Saturn or Uranus, I know that I'm going to get a whole lot of phone calls from clients stressed out of their minds with impossible decisions that have to be made now. Yeah? And sometimes I'm able to respond and offer a session quickly, but that's more the exception. Often there's a bit of a wait, and mostly that wait actually takes them past the station, and then mostly by the time we speak, the whole problem has shape-shifted. And so this information, if you know how to track it, it can really save you a lot of stress. Okay, so what I want to do next, I'm kind of going to cover most of the informational kind of stuff in the beginning, while my mind is still working, and hopefully yours also. Yes, I will do this one. Okay, so this graph shows the following. It's laid out like a calendar. There is 2008, 2009, 2010. Each little box here says Q, which means quarter. And it goes by the month of the calendar year, not by our astrological year. So this grey line here is Saturn in Virgo, and this purpley line is Uranus in Pisces. These graphs are called 45 degree, well, the way I've done it is a 45 degree ephemeris, and I won't bore you with the technicalities as to how it's laid out. Probably some of you already know, but what is lovely about this is that it shows up in very clear graphic form where planets connect. So on the graph, every place where the lines cross over is an exact opposition of Saturn and Uranus. So, you know, you can read it off your sheet. 4th of November 2008, a day the world won't forget, right? US election day. The next one, 5th of February. The third one, coming up still, is the 15th, am I right? Yeah, 15th of September. And we then have the 26th of April down there. And this one's more difficult to see. That's actually the 26th of April and 27th of July. Those last two dates are in 2010. Now, what I want to show you is the following. Although, you see, if you've got a nice computer program or something and you just make yourself a list of the transits, you'll see, oh, Saturn opposite Uranus, 4th of November 2008. And great, that's the first one of the exact. But when you look at it graphically, you can see, oh, blimey, look here. That's only 6 degrees. In other words, but even back at the end of 2008, these two were already within orb of being opposite each other. Now, what I've noticed is if you take the overall arc, what's clearly visible is around here, in other words, at the beginning of 2008, so December 07, January, February 08, that was when, almost like the cards got laid down on the table, or the issues that were going to be your particular challenge through the rest of the oppositions were plonked on your desk or entered your life, etc. And so actually all the omens and the signatures and signs manifested right there during that period. Then you can see what happens as these two separate. They get quite far away. They even actually go out of orb. And so for many people that was experienced like, of course there's positive and negative versions of this, and usually it feels like a mix. So that could have been, you know, a whole sense of creative momentum, lots of new ideas, lots of pressure, lots of action, and then running into all these obstacles. Okay, so all the aha and the new things and the quantum leaps and, you know, were brought to maybe not so much a screeching halt, a juddering halt, I would say, sort of like that. And then the whole trajectory of energy just died down a bit. So depending on what the situation was, you might think, oh, phew, that's the end of that one. Oh, my, phew. Or you might think, hey, what happened to all my creative momentum? It's all gone. And here I am drowning in obstacles and all my creative juices dried up. It's all finished. However, as they start getting back into orb again, now we're going back to September 08, the whole thing starts to rev up again. Now, observe, if you will, the two oppositions, which are the only ones we've had so far. There are five of them, and we're only two down, three to go. You see how close they remained during that period. They're only 3 months apart, almost exactly. And because both Saturn and Uranus, see there's Saturn doing its turn, right around Christmas that was, I believe. That was the 31st of December, 08. Uranus turned at the end of November. So you can see there that they stayed within a couple of degrees of exactitude the whole way through from October 08 through until the end of March. Now, I mean, we won't go off on what happened to the world, because we all know what happened to the world. Basically, everything went into freefall. And talk about structures collapsing, it's still happening. Okay, just an astounding piece of live astrology. You know, in the middle of all the kind of stuff happening, I would often look at this graph and just think, I'm so happy that I can enjoy this astrological perspective because it's totally awesome. On the button, on the very day, on the day of the station, you can see the whole thing just unfolding, which is a good antidote for feeling really scared or whatever else you might be feeling in the middle of all the insecurity. So, I'm pointing this out because, you see, as I said, there's five exact oppositions. And my sense is that the first two, well, the whole long lead up, this was quite a sneaky one because it got within resonating range and then they separated as if to say, no, that wasn't quite real. And you think, hey, what happened? And then I come back again. And then full on, relentless. And they've backed off a little bit now. But pretty soon they're going to start coming together again. Now, we've just had the first two of five. First two, well, the long lead up, all here, and the first two. That is the breaking up and breaking down bit. In fact, I would say that the first two are the breaking up bit, and because it's Saturn's job to try and have things not break up, the effort and stress that we put in to try to have things not collapse on us is so exhausting that after all that pressure, then comes the breakdown, and you think, oh no. Then the letting go starts at a deeper level. We move into stage B or stage 2. Should be stage 3 really, because stage 1 is like the lead up. Stage 2 here was this period from October 08 through until the end of March. Stage 3 we're in now, which is, I think that's the breakdown. It's like, oh, okay. But we're approaching the middle one of the five. And this, I think, it's like the pivot of the seesaw or the apex of the triangle or something. And my guess is, and there's two major reasons why I say this, and I'll list them shortly. My guess is that it's from what's going on in that middle of November time, it's the 15th of, September. That's like when the pendulum swings more from the old to the new. When whatever effort we have been putting in over the whole rest of the trajectory probably starts to pay off. Where we re-engage our Saturn, this is so important, because without Saturn we cannot manifest anything. And so that's why having Saturn as a friend is so important. And so I think that the period of beginning to build towards the new just begins at that opposition and then continues on, obviously, for the final two of the oppositions. There's two reasons why I say that. One is when there are five repeats of any aspect, actually, like that, I have noticed there is a most wonderful symmetry to how the process goes. You always get the run-up. That's, you know, that's the snowplow. principle, the run-up to the first exact contact of a transit is often very difficult if it's a big, you know, I'm here talking about mainly transits of the outer planets. And think snowplow and, you know, dirty wet snow being pushed in mountains everywhere and flying and all that. But the process over five definitely initially is more to do with the breaking down of the old ways. And that can range from being confronted with old attitudes that really you need to let go of, you need to become aware of, let go of and get beyond. Or it can be, you know, a feeling habit, like an emotional Pavlov response thing. It can be a behavior. So in other words, these are all invisible things that maybe nobody else knows about except you. And it, you know, it ranges from those very invisible things to actual changes in the outside world as well. And they're not mutually exclusive, and there's not one way that's right and one way that's wrong. It just depends on what our soul requires. But in the beginning of, if it's five, the first two are more to do with the breaking down of the old. The middle one is a kind of maybe like balancing on the precipice or something, tightrope. And then it moves more and more towards, yes, all this energy is going towards building, towards the new. So one reason I'm saying that is because of this five-fold thing that you can observe if you get any transits where there's five exact contacts. Just check it out. It's a really useful rule of thumb. Now, the other reason I'm saying that is the following. At the moment, it's Saturn in Virgo and Uranus in Pisces. And both those two signs are so-called mutable signs. And that word kind of says it all, really. They are kind of fluid, flexible energies that, in fact, I discovered one Vedic text where the mutable signs are called the signs of destruction. How about that? So I remember learning the word dispersion, like mutable signs disperse energy, and I'm doing a kind of centrifuge thing here with my hand. That's what they do. So positively, that's about sharing, reaching out, expanding, widening. Yes, it's also about wasting energy, dispersing, getting, you know, kind of drained, spilt out everywhere, etc. But you can see that that just by that, it puts a stress on the Saturn principle. Now, also remember that oppositions, oppositions sometimes do what it says on the tin, create oppositions. What they do, certainly at times, is highlight the oppositions that we carry inside ourselves. Let's say that we are both artistic and also scientific in our interests. And let's say that at school we were forced to value one over the other for reasons of exams and career choices and all of that. The fact that both were not honored can create a lifelong like irritation in the soul. So oppositions reveal these internal conflicts, but in a sense that, you know, their job is to reveal those internal conflicts, not just to give us a bad time, but because oppositions are about awareness, and it's only through awareness that we can encompass what we discover about ourselves in a way that's fruitful and that doesn't bog us down. So oppositions are extremely interesting because they're very, very tense aspects, but they're not aspects of action. And in a way, that's one of the reasons they are so difficult. Because if we build up a certain kind of head of steam and we get very tense and uptight and so on, in one way or another, we seek to discharge the energy into action. If we're a sporty type, we might go play squash, or, you know, a bit down from that, we might jog around the block, we might go dancing, We might fight with our partner, kick the dog. You know, you can go all the way down the scale with that one. Or have a frenzy of spring cleaning, there's another one. You know, or do all your tax and tidy up everything, you know, complete, especially with Saturn in Virgo, you know, mad with the detail, yeah. And that also isn't what it's about. The challenge of an opposition is to kind of endure this unbearable tension without doing anything. And so the capacity to wait, which is a good Saturnian quality, is incredibly important, has been all the way through this period, still will continue to be, because I'm not saying here that under very strong opposition type energy that you're not supposed to do anything. That would be a nonsense. But it's an energy where it's usually not possible to kind of figure things out in a logical, sequential way, or things like planning, organizing, decision making become extremely fraught. Because most of the time we're just displacing what is essentially an internal conflict, which is why we have to back off if we possibly can. And so if indeed we are meant to do something under a set of oppositions, it comes about in a completely different way. And I want to explain this because I'm sure many of you here will relate to that. If you are like stuck between, shall I do this, shall I do that, yes, no, this, that, and busy working overtime, you know, staying up half the night trying to sort it through and making lists and all this. If you manage to just lay off, or maybe you get so worn out and fed up you give up that way, if you manage to let go, then what can happen is some kind of situational quirk, or a chance remark that somebody makes, something you see on the television, a billboard by the road, a dream, it could be absolutely anything, will bring you a sudden, oh my God, of course, I never thought of that. Okay, clearly that's what has to happen. Now this isn't the same as making a decision. It's as if the decision was somehow made and then you caught up with it. And it seemed really obvious once it actually surfaced in that way. Now, just out of curiosity, how many people have had one or more of those kind of experiences over the last few months?
Today.
Oh, today. Brilliant. Okay. And it's so thrilling. It's so thrilling. And you see, when you undertake an action, a course of action even, when it's come about in that way, it has a really magical quality about it. So the main work, quote unquote, of an opposition, in this case a whole set of them, is actually about awareness. And if, in spite of it getting really difficult sometimes, if we can honor that and continually resist the urge to just act out in order to release tension, we not only learn the difference between action and reaction, but it clears the way for something like really different. And maybe this is especially true when it's Uranus. But you see, most of us, at least some of the time, we think that we're acting, but actually we are reacting. So the actions we take are an attempt to release tension, please our mother and father, or a whole complicated array of motivations. And it's almost like under the oppositions, none of that is kind of up to the potential of what the aspect offers. And so often we're held back and held back and held back until it all just begins to seem impossible. And then, at the right moment, it's like the Red Sea parts. And I can't resist this. I will tell you an extremely embarrassing example from my own life. And this will serve unashamedly to let you know that I am almost finished the revision of my book on Chiron. But let me tell you what happened. So here, I took some time off around Christmas, New Year. I was aware of that. I was also aware that the first edition of this book was written during the year of the Saturn-Uranus conjunctions. Because as you know, any planetary cycle actually starts at the conjunction. We consider it to be the beginning. And the opposition is like the full moon point or the halfway point. So that's another thing. Many people, it was very clear with me, but many people I know have had echoes of things that have their roots back in 1988. Or something that has come now to fruition and it has to be redone. So let me tell you what happened here. So knowing this and thinking about, you know, oh wow, here I am at the opposition, redoing the book, perfect symbolism. So I take some time off and I get really into it. I mean, I was writing morning, noon and night, very Uranian, my whole sleep-wake rhythm went totally upside down. I wrote all night, I went to bed at dawn, and all the time, you know, my Saturn in the back was really, God, blimey, thinking how on earth am I going to adjust back to normal life when I've got to come out of this period. But actually, it was easy, to my surprise. Anyway, I wrote and wrote and wrote and rewrote, and it was all very thrilling and Uranian and this and that and whatever. But I think, if we use the planetary symbolism, I overdid it in the Saturn in Virgo department because it was really challenging to keep this going and, you know, keep myself fed and watered and keep my life going at the same time. And I could feel, you know, I was getting a lot of tension in my body, and I could feel I was starting to go out of rhythm. And then lo and behold, in March, which is the Saturn station then was in April, so about there I had a massive flood in my house. Now, in terms of my chart, at that point it was Saturn in Virgo in the 10th house, so there's me, you know, in Saturn's house, the 10th house, working away, really being so disciplined and blah blah blah, and then Uranus in Pisces, the water sign, in the 4th house, I had this massive flood, and I mean like ankle deep everywhere, I don't mean like a spill. And I came back from an errand and opened the kitchen door to the sound of the Niagara Falls. And when I saw the damage, in that instant I knew what it meant. So the whole project was brought to a screeching halt for months because, you know, it was on the level of everything had to come out of the whole house, into storage, dehumidifiers, the whole works. And so I just basically shut up shop and everything had to go. Then I had all kinds of other work commitments rolling out, and I knew this would mean a delay of at least 7 months. And that was correct. So then I'm looking at the astrology. See, this just goes to show you can't control the universe with this stuff, but it can be helpful, put it that way. So I see this and I think, okay, next rev up is coming, okay, I'm really going to be ready. Whole house redone, book all ready to go. I start getting back into it, etc., etc. Another flood. Now, this one wasn't an ankle deep job, and I caught it in time to make the difference between a major disaster. And I just thought, you know, this is just unbelievable. So, I mean, talk about having to overcome all these practical obstacles, being brought to a screeching halt. There were so many times during that year, and I just thought, maybe I'm not even meant to do this. I mean, this is too difficult. But somehow I just kept on plodding on, etc., etc.
Interesting is all of
Exactly. And this happened when, by transit, Chiron was also in the fourth house as well. You know, but the main symbolism was this Saturn-Uranus thing, which are the dual rulers of Aquarius. So So there's a whole cluster of planets in Aquarius, and it's almost like that's a sub-theme that belongs completely with this material. But let me press on with this. So anyway, on the 17th of May, we had a station of Saturn, and that was the weekend that I finally completed the text. Yes. And by the next turning point, the major stuff goes to the designer next week, and I anticipate that we'll be very far along in the process by the end, but you know, I'm not kind of working to a deadline anymore because I blew so many of them already. And I just thought, you know, this is running to prototype, because regardless of where I'm at in the process, by there, middle of September, I'll be far enough along to probably be saying, well, I'm glad I didn't give up, kind of thing. And it's completely redone. There's a few bits here and there that I've kept, but the whole thing is completely redone. Now, that's what the oppositions are for. Things that have gone as far as they can go need to either be kind of laid to rest and maybe given a decent burial, as it were, or they need to be kind of taken apart, repackaged, upgraded, updated, etc., etc., so that they can continue their life on into the next part of the cycle. And it goes into the waning half of the cycle. And so that is about actually sharing the energy out wider. And I'm sure that some of you will see this in some of the life processes that you've been in. Now, the other thing I just want to point out before I show you some more diagrams is, now probably there's a number of people here who were born under the Saturn-Uranus oppositions. Anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because the whole middle section of the 1960s was dominated by these aspects. And, of course, back then, Uranus was also opposite... Uranus was conjunct Pluto. So we're having a very interesting echo now and on. If you look at your planetary roadmap, it goes on and on till 2015. So the next 6 years or so, the energies that are really current have a very interesting echo of what was going on during the 1960s. So for those of you who were born during the 1960s, it's as if this is your time. Yeah? And for those of you who were maybe growing up or a little bit grown up or whatever during the 60s, this is a time of reconnection with the vitality and the energy that belonged to that period. That period, if you recall, included the only Chiron-Saturn conjunction in the whole of the 20th century. April the something, 1966, I believe. Don't quote me on that, it could be wrong. It's either 65 or 66, and I know it's April. And so this is a very, very interesting period. And in that sense, because a lot of it has the energy of oppositions, this thing about remembering that oppositions are about awareness, they're not about action. This could be so, so useful. And remember also that as Saturn moves into Libra, that's at the end of October, that is part of a general shift of Saturn and Uranus, Pluto's already there, into cardinal signs. In other words, the energy moves from all these oppositions in the mutable signs, I mean, blimey, to a whole set of T-squares in the cardinal signs. These are the aspects of action. Now, in opposition, as I described, you know, sometimes you get to do a lot, but it's almost like things are arranged for you, and you might have gone through a whole struggle beforehand. It's a different kind of process. But when we're talking squares, that's when you lean into the difficulties, and the struggles are intended to go with the creative thrust of making something happen. However, remember that it's Pluto that's at the apex of the T-square. Therefore, keeping our eye on inevitability, necessity, and those kinds of things is also really, really useful. Because there's a very deep sort of undertow, as you know, wherever Pluto's moving, there's something that needs to happen, has to happen, and there are very deep processes of soul involved here. And so it's a very interesting T-square, because the action has to do with these deep themes of the soul and its awakening, its imperative, and so forth. And I can't emphasize this strongly enough, because, you know, to state the obvious, we're living through such a time of being absolutely drowned, as in Pisces, with all manner of stuff from all manner of media. There we could say that's Uranus in Pisces. We're being drowned in the stuff. And it's very easy to get hooked, as in one of them fish, and to start believing stuff that actually, if you get your reason back, you don't know whether or not this is true. So I want to say, up for the anarchists here, by which I mean anarchists not as in going around, you know, wrecking trains and whatever. Anarchists in the sense that you don't believe any set of information, facts, I call them factoids, which is information masquerading as facts just because it's repeated so often that everybody starts to believe it's true. But if you unpack it, it has no foundation. We are drowning in this stuff at the moment. And there's a lot of fear tactics. Here we can borrow Pluto in Capricorn for that mention. A lot of fear tactics, a lot of control tactics. Now, in a way, the way to protect oneself from that is to take a leaf out of Pluto's book. Remember the helmet of invisibility. You become, as it were, invisible. And I don't mean, you know, that you head for the hills and disappear from the world, or that you don't speak your mind, or whatever. It's something to do with how you hold your energy. You don't attract conflict, neither do you engage with it unnecessarily, and this includes at the mental level, but where the focus of your action is all about staying true, staying in your own integrity, and pursuing your own quiet path, or maybe loud path, whatever it is, but there's a certain kind of integrity which is Pluto in Capricorn. Now, I'm sort of borrowing Pluto in Capricorn for this because, you know, in terms of the esoteric rulerships of the signs, that comes from the astrology work of Alice Bailey. Pluto is the esoteric ruler of Pisces. And so, in a way, he's already implicated. So I just want to add that bit in because that's where we're moving, you see. It's such an elegant set of energies, it's quite extraordinary. Because by the time we get to that crucial third one of the five, within 6 weeks, Saturn goes into Libra, its sign of exaltation. And then eventually, in July of the following year, hang on, is there a little blip first? No, there's not. In July of 2010, Uranus goes into Aries. You want to talk about new beginnings? So, in a way, you know, you don't have to fret feeling that you're like all dressed up with nowhere to go and you don't quite know what to activate next or how to carve your own future because maybe you're drawing a bit of a blank. And whatever you do, don't listen to what I call the great they. Just don't. know that these energies are unfolding in this awesome way, where bit by bit we're getting more and more and more cardinal energy, until, blimey, about this time next year, it's just amazing. Now, the cardinal signs are, well, we talk about the cardinal points of the compass, north, south, east, west. Therefore, they're already, the word has a kind of resonance of orientation. But they are also, the cardinal signs are the solstitial and equinoctial signs. Aries, Cancer, Libra, Capricorn. Spring equinox in the northern hemisphere. Summer solstice, autumn equinox, and winter solstice. So they are the anchor points throughout the year when there is a kind of turning of season or a turning of energy. But the cardinal signs, they are the movers and the shakers of the zodiac. If you want something done, enlist the help of somebody who's got a bunch of cardinal planets. Truly. It's just amazing how that, and I don't know how they do it because I don't have that much cardinal, but it is amazing. So, just remember that. When you feel as if you may be like a bit of a fly in the web, thrashing around, not knowing whether to go up or down or sideways, remember this sequence and just stay in that process of awareness, because that's got, it's a real privilege, because it's a very gentle thing if you allow it to be. And basically, I think, you know, if the process during a time of oppositions, if it gets as extreme as I'm embarrassed to say I let mine get with this writing business, then basically that is your soul's process attempt to get you back, to get you back in balance, but a different balance. And if you push too hard in either direction, actually it's like you can't get back into that middle ground and something has to happen.
You talk about Pluto being the invisible.
Yes.
And that to me is you coming from your soul.
Yes.
Rather than
the personality. Yes, thank you.
Because when you're coming from your visible self, it's so painful.
Yes, and so conflictual very often. Yes.
And you think, right, okay, I give up. I will come from my soul self.
Yes.
And then things sort of...
Then, yes, as we shift level, it releases the energy. Thank you. Now, I think maybe we should have our tea break now.
Yeah.
And then we'll resume in about 20 minutes.